You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What makes contemporary public discourse so caustic? Without a doubt, we are enduring tough times in America right now, but even a quick survey of today's blogs and op-eds and broadcast commentaries is likely to yield examples that stray beyond intelligent criticism into the realm of deliberate personal attacks. And my guest this hour says all that vitriol is crowding out opportunities for weighty, well-argued arguments, a reality that may ultimately be far more detrimental to our society than the vicious chatter is hurtful. David Denby is film critic for The New Yorker. His new book is called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. David, welcome to Think.
Hi, good to talk to you.
We should start with the word snark itself. Where does it come from?
Well, Lewis Carroll, after writing Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, wrote this nonsense poem called The Hunting of the Snark. He says he just made up the word. It was hanging around in the northern languages of German, Norwegian, so on, snorka. It meant snort. In other words, one of those words where the sound imitated the act. But it had no such particular meaning for Carroll. And it evolved within another 40 years ago into something more like its current meaning, which is to rag at someone, to get at them. And it took off from there around 1910 or so.
And the origins, though, of snark as a form of discourse do go back much further.
Oh, yeah. I do a kind of historical sketch here. Definitely the Athenian aristocrats in, let's say, the 7th, 8th, 9th century B.C., even around the time of Homer, this is like 300, 400 years before the great playwrights, the aristocrats would gather around a fire or under a tent or in a, you know, someone's house and have a drinking party. And in the course of this, they would tell stories and so on and sing. Maybe they even recited Homer. And someone had the bright idea of taking the persona of a lowborn Athenian and then to, in that persona, attack someone in the room. And there would be a lot of jokes about his mouth, about his appetitive and sexual use of his mouth. And so that's my myth of origins, of how this particular kind of humor got started. That it was initially for a knowing group who got the jokes. It was within a club. In the modern world, it has metastasized as a pop writing form, and the knowing group can be 30 million people. But that's, and I trace it through Greek poetry, where you could attack someone if you obeyed certain rules, and Roman oratory, and into the 18th century, and then into recent publications in England and the United States right up to the present.
Well, and as you write, the initial desire of snark might have been to make these undesirable people disappear. In its modern form, though, it works very differently. We want these people to endure yet another sucker punch.
Yes. Yes. Spy magazine in the 80s was pretended to be this outrageous, anti-establishment group that was going to attack the Michael Milkins and Ivan Boeskys, the Wall Street scoundrels of the 80s, but actually it wanted them to stay around, exactly what you said, to stay around forever. And the sort of the celebrity group and the snarking magazine were sort of co-dependents, co-enablers. That's definitely true.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is related to that other really curious media phenomenon in which we lionize, if not worship, celebrities, and then we turn back around and we pull the rug out from under them.
Boy, do we ever. And I don't want to, accept myself from this. As a movie critic, I sort of have to plug in once in a while and see what in the world is going on. But it's the same cycle over and over again, isn't it? We build them up very rapidly. Everyone wants to be with them. Everyone wants to sleep with them. Everyone wants to take their picture. Then they begin to stumble. They begin to fall. They do something they shouldn't do. They have a couple of flops. I mean, it happened to Robert Pattinson from Twilight in about 6 weeks. Which is an all-time record. Usually it takes years. You see, Tom Cruise is now on the downside of the cycle. And certainly in the downside, snark is the medium, the rhetorical medium in which we assassinate those we once loved. And it's crazy, right? It can turn into a death watch. Everyone's just waiting for someone to collapse and even to die. I mean, it's sick. It's ugly. We're all part of it. I don't accept myself. And snark is right at the center of it.
How much, and we'll set aside just for a minute the blogs and the media that allow anybody to contribute. How much do you think snark is really about journalists envying the attention being paid to the targets of their writing?
You have a good point there. The endemic problem with journalists is that we fear we might be disposable outsiders who are just hanging on to the great. And this is like close to the celebrity phenomenon we were just talking about. That builds up a certain resentment. You want to get that rage out there. It's also the other thing about journalists is that we're all in a panic at the moment. That is the truth, Chris. I mean, whether it's old media guys like me who are afraid that our beloved publications and newspapers are going to lose their hard copy presence and only have an electronic presence, in which case I think they will have a great loss of authority. They'll just be one voice among many. And this is maybe a separate conversation, but so that produces anxiety, and maybe you turn to a snarky tone to hold on to the disappearing young audience. And then on the other side of the media wall, the new media, the kids who, you know, working in the internet want to figure out how to earn a living because there isn't much money in it yet. And so they get snarky and mean and so on. I mean, there's a whole group of sites owned by a man named Nick Denton, Gawker and Wonkette and Defamer, and they consist entirely of snark. And a lot of it is directed at old media. And the comedy of that situation is as soon as a job opens at Time Magazine or New York Magazine or someplace like that that pays well, they leap into it because they want to make money. So the... In other words, the economic conditions and the matching anxieties of old and new media are also producing this stuff.
Are you surprised, David, that people haven't grown weary of the tone, which seems to be everywhere?
Well, you know, let's tell the truth. Malice is as much part of human nature as kindness, so it's always been with us in one form or another. It takes different forms, you know, in different periods, but it's always been there. And, you know, could you be friends with someone who wouldn't snark Dick Cheney shooting his best friend in the puss?
So you think there are times when it's justified?
Or Elliot Spitzer sleeping with the women that he's been prosecuting? I mean, it would be very hard not to snark those things. But there's a lot of it that I think is, not necessarily aimed at famous and the great, but, at each other. I was just talking about someone who said at her gym there are groups of people who gang up on one person, send cell phone messages, and then even post something on a local board, website, a kind of community post to destroy someone. And there's a lot of it on campus. As we know, high school kids live and die by what other people think of them. And you can be sitting next to someone, just chewing on the end of your pen, and that person thinks you should really jump in the lake and says horrible things about you on a social networking site or something like that. Or in college, a guy sleeps with a girl and then goes on Juicy Campus, which is pretty awful stuff, and takes her apart physically. It's very intimate. It's very detailed. He doesn't sign his name. He hides behind a handle. Her name is named. I mean, now, when you're 20 and, you've been drinking through the weekend or something, that kind of thing might not be very serious. You might laugh it off. Your friends might laugh it off. Well, okay, you go for a job interview 8 or 9 years later. I mean, it might not hurt you in journalism, but, in law and medicine, corporate work. This is a big issue, this invasion of privacy on the Internet. And the legal heavyweights are beginning to, talk about possible restrictions. There was a big conference at the University of Chicago Law School back there in November, including Cass Sunstein, who's now in the Obama administration. And they want to know, is it healthy to have this completely unmonitored, unedited way in which, the Internet, which is a fabulous invention that, is incredible for what it can do for us, but also releases the dark side. Do we want it completely unmonitored? I mean, one idea that's being talked about is if you try to find out about someone on Google, that you name yourself. In other words, you tag yourself. Who's making this inquiry? Cop to it. That might tend to discourage some of the more purely malicious and destructive people who want to hurt their friends and neighbors and, that's one thing that's being talked about. That makes me a little nervous because, I love the freedom of the Internet. But that's where we're going.
Yeah, part of the problem, I guess, is that a lot of people who are doing this writing are not professional journalists, and so they're not held to any even professional standard of accountability.
Right. There's no editor. There's no one who's going to tell you, look, this is low, this is cheap, this is lazy. You know, so what we're talking about, as I just said, we don't want laws. So what we're talking about here, I don't have any other words but ethics, grace, style, little respect for each other. I mean, and now I want to be very clear. I'm not, you know, I love satire. I love late night comedy. I mean, all these people like Stewart and Colbert, I think, have raised popular satire to a level it's never been before in this country. You know, God knows, as a critic, reviewed enough of these potty mouth comedies and enjoyed them very much, like Knocked Up and Superbad. My message is not that we have to sober up. It's more that we have to toughen up, that we have to, you know, have a little higher standards for how we communicate about each other, and particularly when we're getting into personal destruction, that, you know, that's not the way we want to live in a time of trouble. We have to respect each other a little bit more. And the president has been saying this, of course, and every day, and we'll see if it actually has any effect. It's going to take some leadership for the notion that anything goes. You know, as long as you're expressing yourself, you're blessed in some way, to be more like, what am I saying? What kind of discourse do I want? Do I take myself responsibly? You know, how do I care about my fellow citizens? It's a different mentality.
David Denby is my guest. He's film critic for The New Yorker and has a new book out called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. First, though, we ask that you ensure that you are a current member of the station. The number to call there is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go to kera.org online. Whatever contribution works for you is great. If you want to become a friend at the $1,500 level, terrific. If you want to become a member at, you know, $5 or $10 or $20 a month, that's great. We are most interested that you participate at whatever level works for you. Jeff Whittington has joined me now. He is the host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know and the senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And we're thrilled to have David Denby on the show today. We're also really thrilled to be able to offer you a copy of his book, Snark, to you. You can have that as your thank you gift when you join the station today, or any day really, during the membership campaign, tomorrow even, at the $120 membership level. If you become a sustaining member of the station, it spreads that out to easy monthly transfers from your bank account to KERA's membership account, and it works out to $10 a month. $10 a month for the wealth of news and information and entertainment you get from KERA every single day of the year, every hour almost even. Surely there's a show that you don't like, but many of you call in and say, I listen all the time. So we really love for you to support the programming you hear on KERA. Support KERA at 800-456-5372.
If you choose Snark as your thank you gift, again, you make a contribution of $120 or more. You can do that either online or you can do it over the phone at 1-800-456-5372. As we like to be entirely honest with you about, you know that you're not buying this book. This, you know, it's, I think, $16 on the newsstand or at the bookstore, and we'd love for you to buy it. But if you also want to support KERA and you want to sort of do this all at once, this does strike me as the kind of book. It's a short little book, but really, really interesting reading. It's the kind of thing that you read, you know, in a few evenings, think about, and then pass on to a friend. And then pretty soon everyone in your circle has read it, because there's a lot to think about, a lot to talk about.
And you can check it out when you go online to kera.org. You can see that there in the list of thank you gifts, or you can call and talk to a volunteer at 800-456-5372. I want to say thanks to Ron Robinson in Dallas, Melissa Petty in Dallas, Patricia Shine in Carrollton,
Glenn Ellsworth in Colleyville, Prashant Balan in Euless, and you, if you are on the phone or online now, or if you are already a current member of the station. We have $120,500 left to raise. Your portion of that will chip away at the amount, and you'd be surprised how it all comes together, little by little, bit by bit, to make KERA as strong as it always has been for you. So please give us a call now, 1-800-456-5372, or support us online at kera.org. Thanks. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour to New Yorker film critic David Denby. His new book is called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 and join the station and perhaps choose to receive a copy of Snark as your thank you gift. David, one of your concerns about SNARK, beyond the fact that there is quite enough meanness in the world already, is the fact that it really is just not strong enough to support weighty issues of civic discourse.
Yeah, by definition, it's weak. It doesn't engage a subject. It's bulimic almost. It takes it in and then disgorges it without digesting. It decorates around something serious without ever engaging it. And there are very talented writers who do it. And I go after, in particular, Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, who, listen, there's no doubt about it, this woman is brilliant. But what she does is make fun of people's temperament, their affect, their appearance. I mean, she slaughtered Al Gore in 2000 because he had sort of presented himself stiffly in public. But Al Gore had a lot of serious ideas, and I think we might have been better off the last 8 years with Al Gore rather than George Bush as president. And my trouble with Dowd, for all her gifts, she doesn't seem to have a political idea in her head that is what the purpose of government is, finally, and what the purpose of politics is, and what anyone might want to do once he attains power. It's all about appearance, affect, manner. I mean, she went after Hillary. She went after Barack. Whoever's up there, whatever you've got, if you're vulnerable in any way at all, if you expose your throat, she's going to leap. And so that's disengaged kind of snark. Now, someone like, you know, Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central at night is not disengaged. I mean, he and his friend Jon Stewart can be very snarky, certainly, but there is a kind of civic passion behind all of their jokes. I mean, they are saying a government should not take us into war without sufficient reason. It should not erode our civil liberties. A Supreme Court decision like the Ledbetter decision, which is, I think, being overturned, should make sense. I see, you know, a real engagement there. I don't see that with Maureen Dowd and many of the other snarkers.
Yeah, you say that SNARK has no interest in civic virtue and, in fact, assumes that no one is ever sincere about anything.
Right. I mean, and in a cynical period, if you have a government that's lying to you a lot, I think, you know, SNARK grows. And one of the – there was some snarky attacks on the book SNARK by snarky writers in New York. And one of the attackers said, oh, look, this is a corrupt and dishonest world. I mean, he was thinking of the Madoff scandal and the Wall Street scandals in general. And snark is an appropriate response to it. And my response to that was, I couldn't agree with you more about your description of the world, but if you think snark is an adequate response to corruption and dishonesty and deceit, you're a child. I mean, most snark is impotent. I mean, we've mentioned Dowd, who's a heavy hitter. But most of it, you know, it doesn't have that kind of weight. The appropriate response, if we're talking about humor, is satire. Satire. And, I mean, I think, you know, if you've got Colbert and Stewart and some of the other people who are really funny and also have political ideals and ideas, you're talking about an appropriate response to dishonesty. Snark just doesn't cut it most of the time. It just sort of fouls up the air and, you know, without releasing any real laughter. It doesn't have a reforming instinct the way great satire does.
David Denby is my guest. His new book is called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Laura in Irving. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling to ask who did the research and the fact-checking for the book, because I thought it was interesting that Mr. Denby was talking about blogs lacking editors, given that the two references to the blog Wonkette in Mr. Denby's book contain factual inaccuracies. The first was a mention of a blog about Chelsea Clinton that he stated, Wonkette is written by young women who may have hated Chelsea's bland words as she went around the country supporting her mother's candidacy, and said that there was some hidden fury screwing up the writing. And this post was written by one of the two associate editors who happens to be a man, and reading that comment actually made me feel offended.
Well, let's get a response for you. Thanks for your caller.
Well, most of Wonkette is written by women. I mean, that I didn't know who wrote that post, but if it was a man, I apologize, and it's a mistake. There was another case in which they posted something about Teddy Kennedy earlier, when he went in to the hospital for another reason, and a bottle of Jameson's was discovered lodged in his neck. Well, that was originally posted earlier, but it was reposted on the day he went in for brain surgery with a brain tumor. And I thought, you know, what kind of mind does this on a guy on a day in which he might have died? I mean, at least wait. I mean, I'm not saying that Teddy Kennedy isn't a good target, and if he's a boozer, then it's something worth, you know, going after. It's fair ground. But to do that on a day in which he almost died suggests a degree of insensitivity that is characteristic of Wonkette and other sites owned by Nick Denton. They go after you any way that you're vulnerable.
There are other people that you think are brilliant writers, but they're snarky because they really sort of hate everyone. And one example of that is Tom Wolfe. Can you talk about him?
Well, I was thinking of a particular piece by Tom Wolfe. I mean, Tom Wolfe started out doing something phenomenal in the 60s. He went, you know, into the hinterlands and got out of New York and did all sorts and out of Los Angeles and found all sorts of fascinating cultural stuff that was going on, like custom car fanciers, you know, who were redesigning and were really functioning as artists in a way that wasn't before recognized as art. By the time, a little bit later, the piece in particular that became famous as Radical Chic was a report on a party that Leonard Bernstein had in Manhattan in his fancy apartment for the Black Panthers who were under indictment at that point. The case was eventually thrown out. It was a general civil liberties cause, and it wasn't only Bernstein who felt that there was a setup there of that particular group of Panthers. And so Wolf had enormous fun with these upper-class swells hobnobbing with a quasi-revolutionary black group. And what's wrong with it is that he makes fun of absolutely everybody. There's no particular value there that's being upheld. It's all about taste and so on. I mean, he makes a legitimate point about people wanting to hold on to their status and hobnob with revolutionaries at the same time, but he also attacked the civil rights leaders who, you know, were not Black Panthers, but who weren't, you know, dressed in a way that he thought was interesting, who wore Hart, Schaffner, and Marx suits, which was the kind of suit you wore 40 years ago when you had only $75 to buy a suit. In other words, he was hostile to the whole civil rights movement, and this more of this kind of hostility in his very talented novel, Bonfire of the Vanities, a few years later. So that particular piece was a sort of a turning point in Tom Wolfe's career from being this wonderful, exuberant celebrator of what was fresh and new and untracked in American culture to being a kind of sour neocon, and he's continued in that direction. It turned out to be one of the foundational documents of Snark, and I think led to other magazines and so on doing it.
David Denby is my guest. His book is called Snark. Let's go next on the phones to Steve in Frisco. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
Listen, I could take up the rest of the time just talking to Dave. I'm really fascinated in the snark thing, and that you would pick up on it, even write a book about it. It's such an obvious thing to write a book about, but it never occurred to me anyway. But in talking about Tom Wolfe, and I've been on hold listening to talk about Tom Wolfe, and so that's not really why I called. But he wrote that Tangerine Flake Streamlined Baby candy-coated, you know what I'm talking about?
The early book.
Yeah. Well, that was an Esquire article. And the story, I remember that it was written as a memo to the editor because he was so fed up with trying to write, he just couldn't do it. So
right.
The guy said, well, send me your notes. And that's what he did. He typed up a bunch of notes. Okay. And so I'm thinking the snark factor there came as a personal, sharing personally with that editor. And in other words, he wasn't talking to the mass market, the mass audience. He was talking to that one editor, and the editor said, well, this is a great way to appeal to a mass market. And so he published the article.
David, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that this is good. I mean, he was writing to get something off his chest and try and didn't know how to organize it. And it turns out he was creating a new journalistic form, which was a way of writing much more personally, much more evocatively. I mean, anyone who creates language like that, I mean, I wouldn't accuse of snark. Anyone who's genuinely witty, I mean, you can be mean. I mean, there's a lot of meanness. Like Winston Churchill was in the House of Commons when he was younger, and there was this woman, Bessie Braddock, a member of Parliament, Labour member of Parliament, he didn't like, and he said, "I wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole." So everyone said, "Shame. Shame, sir, apologize, apologize." He said, "All right, I would touch her with a 10-foot pole." Now, mean, nasty,
absolutely
personal, yes, 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 right? But look what he did there. He took language, and he set up a certain expectation, and he reversed it. That, any kind of creative use like that, I mean, there's all sorts of vicious remarks in Shakespeare, for God's sakes, but they're within a dramatic structure where they function dramatically to reveal character and to move some story along, and they're, you know, filled with poetic metaphor. Anything that creates metaphor, that creates language, that does what Churchill does, upsets the expected rhythm of a remark, I would call, and that's not snark. What I'm thinking of is lazy, parasitic borrowing of some handy media reference to put people down and to send a signal to a lot of other people that, you know, you're with them. In other words, it starts as a kind of insult for perhaps a small in-group. We were talking about the Greek drinking clubs in, you know, 2,500 years ago. But in our modern media society, it's more like the group of those who get it, like Rush Limbaugh and his Ditto Heads. So that it's, in other words, the in-group has expanded enormously. And whenever you're writing for an in-group and you're being lazy, you're not creating language, you're not creating even a fresh physical description. God knows, as a movie critic, I've written some very tough things about people. But I think if you're just describing appearance without saying how an actor or an actress transforms appearance, there was a critic, John Simon, who would talk about women and beauty contest terms, like, you know, he would measure noses and the thickness of calves and the shape of breasts and so on, without saying how the actress used her physical equipment to shape a performance. Once you're doing that, I think you're doing criticism. If you're just doing the former thing, just grading people on their appearance, you're into snarkville.
David Denby is my guest. He's the film critic for The New Yorker. His new book is called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. We'll be back to our chat with David in just a few minutes. Right now, we would ask you to call us at 1-800-456-5372 or to go online to kera.org. Become the next new member of KERA or renew your membership or come back to us after a long absence. As long as we hear from you and you make your contribution, we are just delighted that you're with us. There will be we won't talk to you at all about straying away from the fold. We'll be happy to welcome you back.
It's very easy. Just call 800-456-5372. You can also support KERA online at kera.org. You support the things that are valuable in your life. You know that you pay for the things you use. That's what we're asking you to do right now. We're asking you to consider public radio. It's obviously an important part of your life. It's your intelligent companion all day long, every day, week after week. Well, we're coming to you right now and saying, you know, where would you be without KERA? Just think about it. Think about what your life would be like if you didn't have KERA, and pick up that telephone and call 800-456-5372 and tell us. Go online to kera.org and decide that this station is worth a couple hundred dollars of your money to help bring you conversations like the one that Chris is having with David Denby right now.
This is a community institution, and you know, I think becoming a member of KERA, a supporter of KERA, says something about the things that you value, that you value ideas, that you do not value snark radio. You know, we're not just here to sort of cut people down. We are here to understand ideas and to explore different ways of looking at the world. I can guarantee you that if you are an intelligent person, you will not agree with or even like every single guest that we bring on the show, because that's never been the aim here. The aim is to respectfully sort of listen to people and interact and understand how people's visions shape the world that we live in. We are so proud to be able to do that for you here at Think. We know that you respond to the program. You listen, you call us and you email us and you tell us what you think about the program. It is also an important vote for this kind of programming when you make a financial contribution at any level that you choose. Give us a call now at 1-800-456-5372.
Perhaps you'll choose to join at the $120 membership level, and we can say thanks with a your very own copy of David Denby's new book, Snark. We've got it available when you join the station at $10 a month as a sustaining member, or $120 all at once. You know, it's really, really easy to do. There are people standing by to take your call at 800-456-KERA. That's 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online to kera.org. Just decide what level is right for you and come on over to the Yes, I'm a Listener, but I'm not just a listener. I'm a listener who supports my public radio station side of the equation. And we've heard from so many of you, and we really, really want to thank each and every one of you who has contributed during this membership campaign. You've gotten us this far. We have, about $119,000 left to raise in the campaign. But, you know, this is we're not there yet. We're still waiting to hear from you, and we're still waiting to hear from you, and you, and you, and you. So call us, 800-456-5372. Join online at kera.org.
It really is remarkable. You know, we started with a $500,000 goal. Now we are down to $119,000. It's remarkable how this the number that we continue to have to raise is able to decrease just with individual contributions. As Jeff mentioned, I think, earlier, the most common membership amount is about $120. But that means we have lots of you who give less than that. We have lots of you who give more. Some of you give thousands of dollars every year. You know what your budget looks like. We would never jump inside your wallet or your finances and make that decision for you. This is entirely up to you. But we do ask that if you listen to the station, you take responsibility for the programming. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. You can also go to kera.org. And our website is a great place, Jeff, too. If you're interested in a thank you gift, it's a great place to sort of, you know, surf around and look at all the things that we may have mentioned.
Yeah, over half of KERA supporters choose not to take a thank you gift, but hey, that's what they're there for. If you want a Think mug, or if you want a KERA travel mug, or if you want one of the books that we've had featured on either this show or the Diane Rehm show in the last couple of weeks, they're all there at kera.org. Just click on the support page and you can surf around and check out all the available thank you gifts.
Be part of something larger in this community, a group of individuals whose generosity makes public radio possible in North Texas. It would not exist if we didn't get more than half of the amount we need financially to keep the station going from people just like you who listen to the station and make a contribution. Our number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can find us online at kera.org. Thanks. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is film critic David Denby. He writes for The New Yorker, but he has a new book out as well. It's called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. You can join us on the phone at 1-800-933-5372. Is there, David, any social or cultural value to snark?
Well, it certainly, I guess, can be a relief of anxiety and rage. Look, you know, I'm not a social psychologist. I'm operating here as a critic of style, but God knows there's a lot of anger out there. I mean, it comes from all sorts of things: income inequality, they're jostling, ethnic groups pushing at each other, personal frustrations, you know, personal happiness, the way the new economy disrupted, you know, many work patterns and shifted people around, you know, that broke up long-held loyalties to people they were working with and put them in new groups, all those things. And, I mean, and you know, it's snark, I suppose, is one kind of release from it. It's only you're expressing your own freedom. The problem is when you take away someone else's freedom. So if you're not, if you're trying to, you know, destroy one of your neighbors or some kid in your class, you're not just expressing yourself. You're hurting someone else's freedom. So, you know, it's, of course, as I said before, you couldn't be human and not snark Dick Cheney's, you know, shooting his friend in the puss. But those are kind of special cases. I mean, the president has been talking about a more civil tone and how we can differ with each other without annihilating each other. I think in a tough time, if we're not going to be truly funny, which is hard, hard work, I mean, someone like Jon Stewart throws out 15 jokes for every one he uses. You know, if you're not going to be truly funny, then at least talk sense, talk plainly, respect your neighbor. I mean, I think that's basic kind of Depression-era ethics.
So are we complicit in this by consuming this content?
Yeah, well, now you get onto that's a brilliant question. I mean, you get onto a really complex issue, and you know, there's a kind of generational difference on the whole issue of privacy. Those of us who are older think of it as one of the glories of bourgeois civilization, that you have a private, sacred space where you can talk over, you know, with your lover, with your husband, with your wife, your best friend, what you really feel about something, and you don't have to be politically correct, right? And you can, you know, all of that. Well, there's a lot of this now that's going on the internet, and also kids who are exposing their love life. You know, it's one thing just to, you know, talk about your preferences, you know, you like Bruce Springsteen or something like that. You know, that's like the inside of a locker that you decorate with pictures. But when you're starting to yield up your privacy, which those of us who are older think is so precious, you're inviting snark. And you're, in fact, in sort of joining the snark culture, because people who are going to read this stuff are not, you know, many of them, unless they're your best friends, are not going to be gentle about it. Your grandmother dies and you air your lament, you're going to get snarked. Your love affair has gone bad and you start talking about that, you're going to get snarked. You're asking for it. And I think that's a mistake. I think the whole idea of privacy has to be made sacred again for a younger generation that doesn't get it. And I mean, my own sons look at me in disbelief, you know, when I talk about this. And that's one thing. And the other thing is anonymity on the internet can be, you know, can really hurt other people. If you don't take, I tell my sons, say whatever you want, but sign your name.
Yeah.
Cop to it. Take responsibility for it. I think that would change conduct a lot if people believed in that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Rita in Dallas. Hello, Rita.
Hi. I would like for Mr. Denby to compare Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann to the late William F. Buckley in the style and presentation and general demeanor of their newscast.
Well, Buckley was very elegant, wasn't he? And he had a command and mastery of English that was the envy of liberals as well as conservatives. And he spoke in those long, beautiful sentences, but he did stick the shiv in. If you weren't careful, you could be charmed by that smile, right? And he would stick the shiv in sometimes. Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann are, you know, of a different generation. They're peppier and faster, and there's a lot of attitude. And I think that they both use snark. Certainly Keith Olbermann turning Bill O'Reilly into a kind of old faithful of stupidity. I think actually, you know, Olbermann could give Bill O a rest now and then. But if you listen carefully to Olbermann, there is that kind of passion that I've spoken to about values, about certain values. When he does one of those tirades about something, like after the gay marriage thing happened, the proposal happened here in California, where I'm talking to you from, he was magnificent. I mean, it was passionate, it was beautifully delivered, it was beautifully written. Rachel Maddow is very, very smart, and when she does interviews with people, she is respectful, even someone she totally disagrees with. She does, you know, she does hold her jokes back, and I think she's still finding her style. She's still very new. I could do with a little less attitude, I think. But if you listen to her closely, she is well-informed. She's very, very smart. So those are people who are going in and out of snark, those two, but also have a terrifically serious side.
So, David, obviously you make your living criticizing movies and culture. And I know that you're not saying here leave all criticism to the professionals. But
No.
Yeah. Can you sort of expand on that idea a little bit?
Well, I think it's great that anyone can give their opinion and reach a fairly large audience. I think it's wonderful. It's a lot of us read this stuff, professional critics, and respond to some of it. Sometimes some of it we ignore, some of it we respond to. What I'd like to see is great critics come out of the web. I think there's no reason in the world why it shouldn't happen and won't happen, because you have unlimited space and you can develop a voice. If you're lucky enough, you can find an editor who's really good, or even a friend who's tough. And the next great movie critic, you know, may just well up like that out of the web. At the moment, it's kind of a chaos out there with so many sites and a lot of enthusiasm for certain kinds of movies. And also, I'm sorry to say, a lot of sort of pumping for big Hollywood commercial movies that, you know, sound almost as if these people work for the conglomerates. I wish there were, what I hope will develop will be sites with both professional critics generating fresh content and non-professionals, if that's the right word, commenting on what they're saying, and that there will be real debate back and forth. You have Rotten Tomatoes, which aggregates all the reviews that are online, but those are from professional from newspapers and magazines, and they also generate their own content. That's a kind of one kind of model. It's going in that direction. I would particularly like to see smaller films that don't have tremendous advertising campaigns behind them. Don't forget some of these things that have become very important in the Oscars and so on, like Capote and Sideways and Brokeback Mountain and No Country for Old Men, did not start at 4,000 theaters on a Friday morning. They started at just a few. As newspaper critics disappear, and many of them have been fired from local newspapers, we need the web to take up that slack and to give us a kind of firm critical opinion. And that can be done both by professionals and amateurs, and they can debate back and forth. I think there's a great opening to criticism in the web.
I have to assume that you get snarked on occasion, and I'm wondering how different the reaction is on your best day as opposed to your worst day when someone has really sort of cut you to the quick.
You know, no one's going to believe me, but I don't read a lot of it because you go nuts if you start responding to all of it. You know, the whole notion of reputation used to be tied up with personal honor, or the other way around. Our sense of our personal honor used to be tied up with our reputation, but we're all being snarked. And probably you too,
yeah.
Believe it or not.
And I don't, well, I read a lot of it, but yeah.
You do read it, okay. But, you know, if you responded to everything, you'd be crazy. So I let a lot of it go, or don't read it, or I, you know, read it selectively. I mean, Sir Walter Raleigh during the Elizabethan period said you don't have to fight a duel over every time you're insulted. I think you could take that, you know, in the internet age, you can't worry about your reputation all the time. And maybe one definition of character in the future will be, what do you respond to and what do you not respond to? If something's beginning to hurt your reputation so badly that it's hurting your life, your social life, or your professional life, then you've got to, I guess, get out there and fight. You've got to unsheath the sword, because the stuff, if it's repeated over and over again, even though if it's rubbish, can attain the solidity of truth. At that point, you're in real trouble. And it's hard to sue, particularly if someone hits you anonymously. You have to sue the Internet service provider. They're the publisher. And they don't want to give away the names of people who are using handles, because that's part of the appeal. So it's a very tortuous process to get anything removed, to get something, you know, taken off Google about you that may be slanderous nonsense is really impossible. So you got to decide what to fight, what to ignore.
David Denby is the New Yorker's film critic. His new book is called Snark. It's mean, it's personal, and it's ruining our conversation. David, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thanks a lot. It was really fun.
Thanks to all of you who have called this hour to become supporters of KERA. Thanks to all of you who are already members. If you are ready to be the next one, you can please call us at 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. It is easy to become a member. It only takes a couple of minutes. If you decide to join at the $120 level or above, and you'd like to have a copy of David Denby's book, Snark, we would love to be able to send that to you. Jeff Winnington is here now. And Jeff, let's have that phone number one more time.
800-456-5372. The online place out there in the internet world is kera.org. Maybe you listen to the station over the internet. Consider supporting the station just because of that. Maybe you get the Think program. You downloaded the audio file, a few hours after the show is live when it's available, and you really rely on that service and you appreciate it. How about $5 a month or $10 a month or $20 a month just to pay for that aspect? Just to say, you know what, I appreciate what KERA gives me, absolutely free, so I'm going to support it.
We still have operators standing by the way. No matter when in the future you happen to listen to the podcast, don't ever feel like you can't make a contribution because we are always ready to accept it. But, you know, specifically during these membership campaigns, we have goals, and you can help us to make those goals so that we keep the station strong. The number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. Thanks to folks like David Allen in Grand Prairie, Ty Johnson in Dallas, Gina Marchbanks in Dallas, and Rollins Gilliland. Hey, Rollins in Dallas.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rollins. And thanks to you. We'd love to hear to see your name come across the screen. We'd love to say thank you to you. We have less than $119,000 left to raise in this membership campaign. That is, we could do that in less than 24 hours. We could do it really quickly if you would just call now, 800-456-5372. Support the public radio station that you listen to. Support the public radio station, KERA, that brings you guests like David Denby, brings you guests like Brian Burrow. Earlier in the drive, Azar Nafisi, Gwen Ifill. These are just the people that we had on our show. You've heard other great guests all over the program schedule over the weekend, Fresh Air, Diane Rehm Show on Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. You hear voices from all over the world every day, and all you have to do is turn on the radio. So decide what that's worth to you and call 800-456-5372 or pledge online because you use the service and you want to take responsibility for it.
Jeff, as you know, and as a lot of you may know, I have children at the house, and we talk a lot about, you know, what we can and cannot afford and what we can and cannot have. And we have this conversation a lot about the idea that it's about making choices. You might be able to afford something, but you know you don't really need it. Or something might seem like, you know, money to spend and you wonder why, but then you think, well, this is something I value. It's important. It's exactly the same way, I think, with a public radio membership. A public radio membership, yes, you're going to be essentially paying for something that you already had for free, and you think to yourself, well, what's the story there? But you do it because it's something that you think is important, because you make the choice to value this and to put your money into something that you know is doing not only a great deal of good for you and for your family, but for the entire community. I can't imagine anything worthier of spending a few dollars a month on. Please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372.
The toughest thing for us to do isn't to plan the guests, the schedule, the topics, isn't to do the research or for Chris to prepare for the program or to make sure that the guest is here on time. The toughest thing for us to do is to get you to pay for something that essentially we give away for free. You turn on the radio and it's there. Why should you pay for it? And you know what? You got a point. Why should you pay for it? Well, I think you should pay for it because it's costs a lot of money, first of all, and because it's free. Because we don't start at the transaction. We say, hey, here is this news and information service. Here's this great programming right here from KERA, a nonprofit right here in Dallas-Fort Worth. And you can use it. You can avail yourself of it. But then every once in a while we say, you know what? What is it worth to you? Put a price on it. Call 800-456-5372. Go online to kera.org and support it.
This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth-Denton, and online at kera.org. We are proud to be the station in North Texas that provides you with public radio and your favorite shows with Morning Edition and All Things Considered and the great things on the weekend, Prairie Home Companion and Car Talk and everything in between. We're very proud to be able to bring Think to you. We do that because listeners pay for the programming. That's why it's called public radio, not simply because it's for the public, but it's by the public. It is funded by public contributions. 1-800-456-5372 or kera.org are where you can go to make yours.
Well, you know, we may make the Think program and the staff that's here at the station may make the programs that you hear or the news reports that you hear, but you make KERA. When you pledge your support, when you send money to the station, you actually make the station exist. The only reason that you've ever been able to listen to KERA anytime over the last 35 years, it's the station's 35th anniversary this year. The only reason that you've been able to listen and that we've been able to listen when we first started listening to public radio is because other people gave money. You know, some of those people have moved on to other places. Some of those people aren't around anymore to support the station, and now it falls to you. It's your turn. It's your time. And the phone number is 800-456-KERA.
You can also go online to kera.org. Think of it this way. When you make a contribution today, you are investing in KERA and investing so that the station will be here for that other listener that comes along a month from now or a year from now. And that listener eventually thinks, okay, I'm going to support the station. Your investment now helps us to recruit that listener and ultimately, we hope, that supporter of KERA. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. We have a crop of wonderful volunteers in the other room waiting to take your call. You can also make a contribution online at kera.org with a credit card or a debit card. We can set it up for you so that you can have a sustaining membership, which is a monthly draw from your credit account, your debit account, into KERA's membership account. We can set it up many different ways. The important thing is that you call us at 1-800-456-5372. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.